Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Off the ball breakfast.
Abdul Fadwa for Leicester. Check it out. Beats two men. Scores from the halfway line.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The news round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening. You're welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up, we'll be speaking to Steve Bunce from 7:30. He is, by all accounts, standing by in a very plush hotel in Miami, looking forward to Anthony Joshua's latest chapter. He's up against Jake Paul tomorrow night on Netflix. Whether you love or loathe Jake Paul, it's certainly going to do big numbers. Anthony Joshua's going to go from being a very, very rich man to a very, very, very rich man after tomorrow night. And there's talk, big talk now, of Joshua versus Fury finally happening next year. So loads to discuss with Steve Bunce, as well as the retirement this week of Terence Bud Crawford as well, one of the greats of the ring. From 8 o'clock, we're going to be joined by Timothy Gay, who has written a book on Rory McIlroy. Came out earlier this year. He's written a new epilogue for UK and Irish readers. He released a book about the ups and downs of Rory McIlroy right before he won at Augusta this year. So it'll be interesting to get his take on how 2025 has progressed for McIlroy. Also, before 9 o'clock this evening, we'll be hearing from Sinead Goldrick and Carla Rowe on the latest episode of our Football Pod Club with James Paddy and Tommy Rooney. And then 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock is the football show with Dion Fanning in studio, who is with me here for the news round as well. Dion, how are you doing?
Good, Owen. How are you?
Very well. Cameron Hill is here as well. Cameron, how are you doing?
Evening, folks. How are we?
You have been doing the Lord's work. You know that Dion Fanning is coming in, so you got to pack your news round tonight with cricket.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it's our first Ashes slot in a fortnight.
Yeah, yeah. It's thrilling so far, the Ashes. I think you'll agree, Dion. Very competitive. Have you divested from Snicko?
Well, it's extraordinary how bad Snicko has been. I don't know how much people need to be brought up to date in this, but a number of there was a key wicket of an Australian batsman. He wasn't given out. He also committed the what's considered the desperately unsporting act. Carey, the Australian batsman or wicketkeeper, who went on to make a century, he knew that he'd hit it. And he didn't walk, which many people consider very unsporting. But then, especially these days, most people walk because they know that they'll be found out by the technology. But the technology was out, and the technology company said somebody pressed the wrong button. So they got the mic, they didn't sync the mics correctly. So the spike was coming, the spike appeared. Do you know what Snicko works on?
It's based on sound.
Yeah. And the spike appears as the ball goes by the bat, if it's hit it. So you know that it's hit it. But the spike appeared just beforehand, so it didn't make any sense. But they couldn't say, oh, no, because it was given not out.
So what did the spike come from?
The spike came from the ball going past the bat, but the sound, the operator had pressed, somehow he had got them out of sync.
Oh, I see.
In setting it up.
Okay, but that actually does make sense as to what this scandal was. Well, one thing that did strike me as well is that it's magnificent Christmas watching. I'll hold my hands up and say I'm not a cricket fan. I don't watch enough. As much as I'd love to get into cricket, it's just not something that's currently on my plate.
But you know what you should do? We spent a lot of time talking about the Ashes, but you should go along to one of the Ireland matches.
I would love to.
You know, and like we, you know, when like
Day
out in Malahide. There's nothing like it. It's fantastic. Now, unfortunately, last year we were going to go for Ireland, England, and then we had tickets and then it rained. So that's the problem with cricket. But it, when you, and that's the same thing happened the year before with the Ireland India. But when you do go, it's glorious. And the, you know, and it's exciting. And like, we talk a lot about these, this cricket and the Ashes, but it's important to stress that the Ireland cricket team has had such a, you know, especially in recent years, it's come on so, so much, and it's a team that's really worth supporting. But we can now talk about the Ashes, having said, but that's how you're going to, that's your gateway.
Yeah, well, I mean, some sunny Thursday afternoon next July, I would be game for going out there, Dion. We'll record a few pints with Dion Fanning. We'll record our football show out there or something like that next
during the World Cup.
Basically, my takeaway is that cricket in Ireland is the equivalent of Newgrange on the winter solstice. You mightn't get what you're looking for. You've bought your ticket, you've waited all year, and it mightn't be what you want, but when it's good, it's good.
It is, exactly. And I actually was at Lourdes when Ireland had played their test match there, and that was spectacular. And the, you know, it was a great day because the Irish cricket community is quite a small community still, and everyone was there. And that was a fantastic first day. It didn't go so well after that. But back to the Ashes. It is great Christmas viewing
because it's Christmas night.
It's Stephen's Day in Australia, and you know, so you sit down. Everything is done. Everyone knows that great feeling about 8 o'clock on Christmas Day when everything, you know, you don't have, like, nothing more to do, and then there's cricket on, and it's actually even more important this year, Owen, because there are no Premier League fixtures
on the 26th
on Stephen's Day.
But there's one.
There's one.
Newcastle versus Manchester United.
Okay, but anyway, this is
much bigger.
You know, it's just a, you know, normally you know you've got this, and then you've got all the fixtures, but now you've only got one, so the cricket is even an outsized importance. Even if, like, people have to keep, I'm really enjoying one of the great joys of an England calamity cricket tour is the way the rationalisation process that takes place day by day, hour by hour, where the expectations and the demands start just keep changing, you know. So, like, you know, when they finish today and they're whatever they are, 100 and many runs are they behind, 160 runs behind or something like that, and they've 2 wickets left, and you know, if they could get this down to 120 runs behind, maybe, you know, and they've started today, he's going, England need a really strong. But you know, we've started the test with England really, really strong performance here, and they took them flying out of the traps with regressive bowling, and you could tell. I texted a friend of mine. Now, I do make occasional sweeping statements, but I did text him after about four balls and said the test is already over, because England's just started so timidly, but they're always just moving. Now, if they lose this one, which they're probably going to, they can't really, there's no more rationalisation because they've lost the Ashes. Like, they need to win all three tests from here, and they're really unlikely to win this one.
It's good life advice for any sports fan out there. When the Monopoly at midnight on Christmas night ends in tears, you can storm off and say, I'm going on to TNT to watch the Ashes. This is how I'm going to spend the rest of my evening. I do usually watch the NBA on Christmas Day. I do like a bit of Christmas Day sport when the evening is kind of winding away, but maybe it'll be a cricket decision this year. But as you say, Stephen's Day, dearth of opportunities to watch sport, just the one Premier League game. And I can never understand why the darts doesn't go back on Stephen's Day.
I know. Oh, don't get me started. Like, I don't understand
the logic
of it. I don't understand the logic of it. Like, it's not, you know, what is it, health and safety or something? You know, like, it doesn't make any sense. I never understand, why aren't they back in? Like, they rise for, you know, their Christmas recess. Like, it goes on for so long. It's crazy.
Embrace modernity, PDC. Embrace modernity. Like, give us some darts on Stephen's Day. Cameron, where do you want to start this evening when it comes to the news, John? I guess Thursday nights we were kind of hoping for a bit more investment in the Irish clubs in Europe, but sadly they were both knocked out last week.
Yeah, the knockout stage is already out of reach for both Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers as they head into their final league phase games in the Conference League this evening. Shells are in Slovenia, hoping to finish with a positive result against Celje. Midfielder JJ Lunan says they'll savour their final run out in this season's competition and feels they've learned a lot.
Obviously not to disrespect the League of Ireland, but it's quite a step up, especially when you play against your Palaces and Alkmaars. I think the speed of their thaw and how technically good they are is something you have to get used to, and it's a pity we don't get to play in games like that more often throughout the season, because I think you'd only get better playing against that quality of opposition. But I don't think we've been too far off things. We've had good chances in games that obviously we haven't taken, I started in the first division, so to think 4 or 5 years, whatever it is, I'll be playing in a conference group, I'm not sure I would have believed you. So I think the club has to take a lot of belief from that, and it's a good achievement.
You have some team news for us, Cameron?
Yes, indeed. 3 changes for Shelburne this evening. Sean Gannon, Dan Kelly and Mipo Adebeko coming into the side, while Milan and Beng, Evan Caffrey and John Martin drop out.
Okay, and then we have Rovers then.
Yes, indeed. And they host Maltese outfit Hamrun Spartans at Tala Stadium tonight, with €400,000 in prize money on offer for a win. Manager Stephen Bradley insists they won't be treating tonight's match as a dead rubber.
Oh no, it won't be that. We won't treat it as a European game. Financially, it's so important for the club. We owe our fans a win. They've been amazing for us. Domestically and in Europe, they put their hand up pockets, they support us. Through thick and thin, we owe it to them to go and try and win the game. And like you said, on so many levels, it's important for us. We won't be showing up tomorrow with anything else in our head other than win the game.
And team news from the Rovers' perspective, just the one change from last weekend's run out against Breidablik, which all but ended their hopes of making the knockout stages. Alan Matthews comes in for Lee Grace tonight. Both of those games, as well as Crystal Palace against Coops, where Palace will break the top 8 if they win, they all kick off at 8 o'clock tonight.
Okay, so Palace probably need to go in search of getting all 3 points tonight. They didn't start the Conference League overly well, which, as we've seen over the past couple of weeks, not great for their weekend prospects in the Premier League. They've really struggled to do those back-to-back games. Sticking with Rovers, some transfer news.
Yeah, it's been rumoured for a couple of weeks now, but the confirmation that Josh Honohan is heading to League One outfit Lincoln City in January. The fullback moved to Tala from Cork City at the start of 2024, scoring 10 goals in 94 appearances for the Hoops. His form for the Premier Division champions has earned him a couple of call-ups to recent Republic of Ireland squads, yet to earn his first cap at international senior level, but an undisclosed fee and Josh Honohan heading across the water.
What can you tell Josh Honohan about Lincoln? The city inside out.
I'll be in Lincoln this weekend, so I will. I can start looking for, doing the kind of, this is where you want to go. You want to go uphill.
Uphill, okay.
Uphill, yeah.
What nice sort of place is Lincoln?
It's a lovely old, beautiful old town, gorgeous cathedral. I don't know if that's what Josh Honohan, beautiful carol services at Christmas.
Right.
He's just going to miss that if he's already going in January. So I'm not giving him anything there. Lovely castle, great historic old town. Downhill, a little less historic. Okay. Go uphill, Josh. But it's, my wife is from just outside Lincoln, and we're going over there, not for Christmas, but just for the weekend now.
It's good to clarify that you don't just have some random weird Lincoln interests. There is family connection.
There's family connection there.
Isn't Lincoln the place that Mr. Gilbert threatens Will from the Inbetweeners with if he doesn't get his UCAS in order? Hello, the University of Lincoln. And it's like, oh my God, no.
No, well, my wife has a slightly jaundiced view of her hometown, so she'd probably agree with that. It's also where Eamon de Valera sprung Michael Collins out of jail. Lincoln jail. So there's
I mean, Josh Honohan adding a new chapter to an already famous story. We'll move on to the Sports Personality of the Year in the UK, which is happening tonight, Cameron.
Yes, and Rory McIlroy has described his triumph at the Irish Open as a personal highlight for 2025. So, as he mentioned, he's in the running for the BBC Sports Personality of the Year award tonight, having claimed a first ever Masters win earlier this year at Augusta, while also helping Europe retain the Ryder Cup. But speaking to the Shotgun Start podcast earlier this week, he says the win at the K Club was hugely important to him personally.
Maybe it's underrated, or we haven't seen, or was particularly enjoyable, amusing, something in your own year of view outside of the high points that we've talked.
Yeah, I would say, like, the one thing you're probably not going to touch on, because this is a PGA Tour year in review, is the Irish Open for me. Yeah. Was probably like a high point for myself. That was, going back to, it wasn't the first time going back to Ireland, as Masters champion, but I think just the, I'm Northern Irish, and sometimes the relationship that I've had with the whole of the country has been a little complicated at times, and I felt like that was just such an amazing, it was an amazing reception. I'm never going to hole in that putt on the last to get into the playoff. The noise, the scenes, again, a bit like what Augusta does so well. I didn't see a lot of people on their phones. People were really into what they were watching. And you had boys and you know, you had sons and dads embracing each other. It was the most, look, in terms of my career, and like, it's not going to be the most memorable for people, but I talk about at this point in my career, just trying to create or be a part of these special moments.
It's interesting to hear him talk like that, because I do sometimes think that the complicated relationship between Rory and Ireland is sometimes overblown, but clearly not when he's literally saying it himself. And like,
yeah, but maybe he's had a complicated. I suppose is a thing. He's probably felt he has a complicated relationship, but for very understandable reasons, because he didn't. And I think McIlroy is a really intelligent person in lots of areas, not just sport. And I think because he wasn't, you know, embracing the flag or the Olympics and these things, which was an understandable feeling for him. You know, maybe there was something coming back to him then that he felt wasn't getting. It was complicated in both directions. But I think there's always been an affection for him, and then obviously, and I guess grown, and then this year being such an exceptional year, and a kind of, you know, the Masters being one of those events where, you know, we've had a few of them this year, like with Troy Parrott, things that people who don't follow sport are talking about the next day. Everyone has watched it. Everyone is caught up in it. And it's funny to link Rory to the Ashes. I would say, no, when he says that nobody's on their phones, I would say that is a particular thing with McIlroy too, because one of the things that England are being criticised with this team, this Bazball team and this philosophy, because they went out to play attacking cricket and all this kind of stuff. And to listen to the cricket commentary now, you'd think no England team had ever lost 5-0 in Australia before. Like, this has just been invented with Bazball. And the whole idea of Bazball was to be exciting and to kind of try and win matches. But more than that, it was actually to make you feel something. You know, and I think as I get older, I've said this before to you, making people feel something is what sport is all about. It really is. And McIlroy, the reason people aren't on their phones when Rory McIlroy is playing is because they don't know what's going to happen. Anything could happen. And that's brilliant. And that's why, you know, if you take people out of their phones and into the present moment when you're someone like Rory McIlroy, does that for people, because anything could happen and he makes people feel things. And that's what happened this year. You know, that's what happened in the Masters. And I'd say he probably has percentage of the people on their phones watching McIlroy is probably a lot lower than any other golfer, because, you know, we saw it all through the final round of the Masters, the stuff that was happening, that, you know, we thought it's won, it's lost, everything like that. You couldn't take your eyes off it. And that's what sport is really for.
I also think that, look, I mean, he's won the biggest competition in golf this year. So there's a level of this which is about straight kind of like raw success that he's had this year. But there is also the sense of love that people would have felt in the aftermath of that moment, which is on a par with the Troy Parrott moment. Like, I do think Parrott probably edges it in terms of the Irish sports moment of the year. But there's no question what number two is if Parrott is your number one, and it is Rory at Augusta. And I don't think it is just entirely down to the black and white nature of finally he has done the Grand Slam. It's because we've gone on that journey of not using our phones around Rory McIlroy, because we don't know which way it's going to go for him over the past decade.
Well, yeah, because of the way everything about him was encapsulated in that final round, that, you know, like, you're there going, oh, he's won this easily now, and then he does, you know, like that, like, terrible shot that, you know, people who know about golf will tell you was the only thing he could have done to not actually have a kind of an easy hole. And then he did the exceptional shot two holes later. All those things that are kind of aren't part of an attritional approach to sport. And, you know, there will be plenty of people who think, oh, you could have done this a lot easier, you could have done this a lot better. But ultimately, they're the things we remember. And, you know, Irish football, like, those two, like, obviously the Hungary game totally fits into that, but Irish football fits into it because nobody had any expectations and nobody felt anything was going to happen. And then, like, the most extraordinary thing happened.
He is favoured to win this tonight. Mm. And we'll maybe actually we spoke
to him. Why is it on tonight?
It used to be on a Sunday, didn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe actually Troy Parrott will get relegated to second place behind Rory McIlroy winning Sports Personality of the Year. That'll actually be the sports moment of the year for the Irish public.
I think once Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers weren't in contention for the knockout stages, Dion, they said, Thursday will do, so he's sticking on then.
He looks like 9-4 on with Lando Norris, the second favourite, at 4-1. He's never won this before. The last person from Ireland to win this award?
AP McCoy.
There you go. Bingo. In 2010. And the last one before that was Barry McGuigan in 1985. Right. Okay. So they're the most recent two. Obviously, McIlroy has been nominated in the past for this. He came, I'm not sure is there a runner-up, but he was certainly nominated in 2014 when he lost to Lewis Hamilton. Yes, he was runner-up that year. So very best of luck to Rory McIlroy in the BBC Sports Personality of the Year tonight.
I love the way they talk about Spotty, as it's known over in the UK, as if it's kind of like the ultimate goal. Yeah. Like when McIlroy won the Ryder Cup, there was talk, God, he's in a great chance to win Spotty, as if it's all been leading up to this in a kind of...
It's like a qualifiers, you know, like Troy Parrott's hat-trick, he's a great chance of going to the World Cup. He's a great chance.
He starts out...
Finally, now making...
In January of 25, he's going, okay, how do I win it this year? Right, Masters maybe, and then the Ryder Cup, and I'll throw the Irish Open in there for good measure. That should see me over the line.
We were doing so well in this country, weren't we, until... Conor McGregor got given the RT Sports Personality of the Year, and then that's kind of been the legacy of that competition diminished forever. Where do you want to go next, Cameron?
Talk rugby, Owen, because James Ryan is in line to make his 100 cap for Leinster in their URC clash with Ulster at the Aviva Stadium tomorrow night. Second row named alongside Brian Deeney. Jack Conan has come through the return to play protocols and is captaining the side from number 8. There's a new look front row of Jack Boyle, Gus McCarthy and Rabah Slimani, while Sam Prendergast is preferred at 10 this week, partnering Luke McGrath in the halfback. Wallabies prop Angus Bell will make his first start for Ulster in that game. Stuart McCloskey returns from injury at inside centre, while Ethan McElroy is in the match day 23 for the first time since January, and Munster have made 6 changes to their side for Saturday's clash away to Ospreys and Bridgend. Fineen Witcherly and Calvin Nash return from injury to start in the second row and on the wing respectively, while Jack O'Donoghue will captain the side from blindside flanker, with Tadhg Byrne rested this week. Now, you might remember head coach Clayton McMillan had been looking for a big response from his players last week after that heavy defeat in Bath in the Champions Cup, which he described as bordering on embarrassing. And despite a 31-3 win over Gloucester at Parky Cueve last weekend, he admitted today he wasn't overly satisfied with their showing.
It was, I think, probably made our frustrations clear after the game. You know, like, I understood that they didn't bring their best side. There's a real opportunity for us in Cork to, you know, put in a statement performance, particularly after a poor one against Bath. And, you know, we didn't really do it. There's lots of positive moments, but just far too inaccurate, particularly in and around our 22 metres. I think we had 15 entries, which is a huge amount. If you're getting that many, you want to, and you're converting even half of them, you're winning rugby games and you're winning them comfortably. So a big focus around the execution in that area, I guess, better clarity. So that's probably been our biggest focus.
Yeah, like, that's been the commonality between the first two games, not being able to put enough points on the scoreboard relevant to their position on the pitch. I don't know, speaking generally, next weekend against Leinster is going to be a real moment in this season. Mm. For both Leinster and Munster, to be fair, I mean, would it be too negative of me to suggest that Munster should be fearing some sort of backlash from Leinster next weekend?
Maybe. I think, like, I asked him today in the presser, I was on the call with Clayton McMillan, and asked, do you know your strongest team net? And a very blunt no was his response. Monosyllabic stop to that one. So again, it's 6 changes this week, and maybe you're looking at Leinster and then Ulster after the day after New Year's Day and thinking those interpros are going to be so physical that I'm going to keep a few in reserve. Like, Ty Burns not in the side, Craig Casey's not in the 23 either. Maybe they're being kept for those games. But yeah, I think, like, that was by far Munster's best performance this year, was the game in Croke Park. And you can only sound that kind of "this wasn't good enough" klaxon once or twice when you're the head coach, especially a new head coach. And I know Brian O'Driscoll was on with yourself making the point that that's not a card you can play too many times before it loses its sort of potency. But this is a big, big game in terms of where they're at and how they quell the emotion, because Connacht came undone against the Ospreys a couple of weeks ago in the Challenge Cup because of Ospreay showing this really late fight back. And if Munster fall to that as well, you'd start to wonder whether there is a, they do have the mentality to go and beat Leinster and Ulster and push on in the Champions Cup and really show some progress.
Yeah, yeah. There's a long way to go, it seems, under McMillan this season, and he'd be the first person to admit it. I've just seen a text in here from Patrick. I can't think of a worse way to spend Christmas Day than watching cricket. I'd rather watch the Fair City Special, and that's saying a lot. The Fair City Special is the best episode of the year.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's just, you know, that's the kind of stuff you got to put up with.
Like, the snobbery. The anti-snobbery.
What your family say? It's like, oh, God, come on, why are you watching the cricket again?
Nobody says, no, my family, they're quite happy. I come from cricket on both sides of my family. Right. The Lincoln side of the family, Cameron, is very pro-cricket, very, very pro-cricket. So
Patrick's not invited to the Fanning Christmas City. Dinner this year.
Jesus Christ.
Jack says, Rory winning the Masters, potential moment of the year. People will say Troy Parrott's goal, but that's recency bias. Rory's win was huge. And then Emma's making the point that Rory's going to the ceremony for the first time in 10 years tonight. So looks like he might be tipped off about something.
It'll be tough if he doesn't win.
You've got a couple of more stories for us, Cameron?
Yeah, huge day in the darts at the World Darts Championships in Ballypally. Owen, while you were busy working, we were watching Dave Manua pull off a major shock. The Kenyan coming from two sets down to beat 18 seed Mike Dedeker 3-2 and progress to the next round at Ballypally. It was straightforward for Callan Ridds, who beat Patrick Kovacs 3-0 in the opening game of the day. Japan's Motomu Sakai beat Thibaut Tricol of France on the same scoreline. This evening, you've Dave Chisnell taking on Fallon Sherrock before three-time champion Michael Van Gerwen meets Mitsuhiko Tatsunami. Right now on the Aki, you have Jermaine Watamena taking on Dominic Grulich.
Brilliant. Just some of the greats, really, in terms of what you've listed off there. I was watching again the Dirk van Dijvenbode entry there the other day. Are you familiar with Dirk van Dijvenbode?
No.
He enters to really heavy, hard style Dutch or maybe German music, and it just turns the place into like a very sort of grotty rave for 40 seconds as he comes in, and the cheerleaders doing their best to kind of keep up with the incomprehensible BPM of what he's actually walking on to.
What would be your darts walk-on song?
You're putting me on the spot here.
I think Hurricane by Bob Dylan would be such a change of pace, but also it's the best bit of Dazed and Confused when your man Wooderson walks in, so I'd pick that.
You've been thinking about it. I need a moment to think, Cameron. Need a moment to
very
think.
Very unfair there.
We have already mentioned the cricket already, so as we've got a good sense of what's happening there. So we might leave the news round there. Cameron Hill, thank you very much for all of that this evening. Dion Fanning, thank you for joining us in the news round. You'll be back again.
Off the Ball Daily.